Hello, friends, and welcome to Inks and Issues, a book club podcast for comics. I'm your host, Jonah Gregory.
And I'm a sexy reindeer, Kieran Bennett.
I mean, there's no denying that. And today we are taking a look at Super Powered Revenge Christmas, which is about a gritty reboot of The Christmas Story. Not the movie.
Hell yeah.
But like the origin
Christmas. Story. the origin story of Christmas.
Yeah. Basically,
God, if I have to see one more movie where Santa's parents are shot in an alleyway, I'm going to scream.
Somehow they even worked it into the Joker film. That was weird.
Wait, what? Really? You see Batman's parents shot in the Joker film?
Yeah. So I was making a joke about Santa. Yeah. Anyway, we were going to do this book, what, like a year ago? And then.
Yeah, I think so.
Scheduling didn't work out, so we're like, well, by the time this one comes out, it'll be like March, so maybe next year. So this time we got this. So Kieran, what was your familiarity with this comic?
Zero.
That's fair.
I think last Christmas I was like, we should do a Christmas book, and I went to Comixology and I searched Christmas. And this is one of the first ones that came up, and it was reasonably affordable. So I was like, yep, sounds good.
It does feel very appropriate because it's written by Bill Corbett, who is the second person to be Crow on Mystery Science Theater and was a writer there for many years. Now is on Riff Track. So basically a person I was already a huge fan of because, you know, I grew up watching that show, and he's a funny dude on Twitter as well. And, you know, they've been doing Riff Tracks, which is essentially just more Mystery Science Theater, except without the little silhouettes of robots at the bottom of the screen. So and then the artist, Len Peralta, I almost said Ken, and I'm like, that's not right. It's Len. Len Peralta. I mostly knew his stuff from back in my old webcomic days, and I know he was one, like, I didn't know him personally, but a lot of people I was acquainted with at met at cons and stuff were friends of his, so I saw a lot of his art being shared. And then I think he did, like, a set of trading cards that were, like, basically internet geek celebrities, but, like, in trading card form, but then he, you know, made them into goofy characters and stuff, too. So I mostly knew his art from that stuff, but I don't know if he's done actual other comic books, but I know he has been an illustrator online for years and years and years. So and he may have, I'm just not familiar with them if he's done that. So so before we dive in, I know we have one fun fact. So Kieran,
yes, which you so graciously brought to my attention, which this is a really, really, really fun fact, I thought. Mm-hmm. So Super Powered Revenge Christmas by Bill Corbett, in fact, was originally a play,
mm-hmm.
and then was turned into a comic book with, you know, art by Len Peralta. But both the play and the comic were written by Bill Corbett, which I thought was pretty fucking fun.
Yeah. Bill Corbett has actually written other plays and things, I guess, as well. But I'm not in that scene, so I didn't know that either until he tweeted about it recently.
Mm.
I do know the one movie script that he has had published is Meet Dave, which is an Eddie Murphy movie where he's an alien pilot. Yes. There's a bunch of small aliens piloting a giant person spaceship. Yes. That's Eddie Murphy.
A bunch of tiny Eddie Murphys inside the big Eddie Murphy.
I'm pretty sure there's a variety of people inside the giant Eddie Murphy, including a tiny Eddie Murphy.
A tiny Eddie Murphy.
Now, I have not seen this movie. However, well,
little known fact, it's actually just a documentary.
Oh, so Eddie Murphy is actually a spaceship being piloted by a tiny Eddie Murphy with all of his friends.
It would explain a lot, don't you think?
I mean, yes, I guess. So, yeah, so this one does have a few parts, but I don't know, anything that doesn't have traditional, like, here's episode one or issue one, it's like kind of hard to have natural breaking points. So I'm just going to go ahead and start doing the rundown, and you can hop in when you feel like it. So we open at Nick's bar, where a gloomy looking man enters and orders 5 shots of bourbon. And yeah, basically he talks about his disappointment in trying to get this story he's been trying to get off the ground. He basically complains how Christmas needs a reboot, and that sets the stage for, like, the whole point of this book is we're going to poke a lot of fun at reboots, and especially gritty reboots, which is, you know, a thing we've commented on a lot over the years.
Yep.
And basically this guy's complaining because Christmas, like, the lore of Christmas is so, like, piecemeal, like, just little bits have been taken from all these different stories that he's like, no, we have to, like, rewrite it all. So it's one cohesive thing. So he gets the bar patrons, like, kind of interested in what he's saying, but they're kind of arguing with him because they're like, you know, Christmas is fun. Like, hating on it is very high school. Yeah. Why would you change it? And he's like, no, I love Christmas. So that's why I was trying to save it by, you know, rebooting everything. And then we find out that his collaborator for the last 5 years is a lady who was his artist. And there may have been a little more going on in their relationship than just working together on comic books. Or at least that's the impression we get.
Oh, mamma mia.
So things are getting spicy. So basically they kind of argue about, like, hey, this was a good idea. No, it was stupid. And, like, you went too dark and gritty and blah, blah, blah. So it kind of does some back and forth. And then long story short is they get the bar patrons and the bartender to listen to the story so that they can decide whether it was, like, the ending was the problem or if the whole thing was the problem, like, whose ending was going to be better, the writer or the artist. So that's the whole setup, and it's a few pages and it's all in black and white. So one of the things this book does a lot is the parts that are in the real world where they're telling the story of the reboot are in black and white with usually just, like, some bits of red to highlight certain things. But then the actual story that they're telling is a full color, like, action comic. So what did you think of the setup?
It was not what I was expecting.
No, me neither. Not at all. Like, yeah. I didn't know it had this whole framing device.
Yeah. So I think the framing device, because, like, it's not like they set up the you know, the they want to tell the story to the bar patrons and then they kind of go into the story and then we don't leave it until, like, the end or anything. We go in and out of the story of the story and back to the bar quite a few times, which I thought was kind of interesting, because I think when I started reading it, I didn't expect this at all, but I assumed that once we got into the story we wouldn't leave. But I think it kind of worked in, like, to break it up a little bit to go in and out of the story and kind of go back to the bar and sort of check in on what's happening there. So I, you know, it wasn't what I expected for sure, but I did like it.
Yeah, I agree. It was only jarring in that I wasn't expecting it. And again, I was the same way. I assumed, okay, now that we're into the story, we won't see these other characters for a while. But yeah, them coming back in actually does kind of help flesh everything out and explain why the characters are the way they are. And because it's, like, all commentary on the, you know, modernization of existing things for better or worse.
When I was reading this, like, and when the Red Avenger shows up very shortly, I was thinking essentially the entire time of you saying, this isn't your dad's Christmas.
I mean, that's fair. I would have said that had I been talking to you. So speaking of, we get that first panel in color, which is actually a cool way to introduce it, because it doesn't just go from, like, the black and white to a traditional full color shot. It's actually, like, this red and orange kind of, like, faded out, or, like, what do you call that, where it kind of is a gradient down the page. It has a big, bold red background box explaining what's going on. The Red Avenger cruises above the cold, cold city on his blood-colored rocket sled, brooding, ever brooding about what's below. So that's our introduction to not Santa, the Red Avenger.
The Red Avenger.
Yeah. And he's very much Batman monologuing about how they're scum and they're winning and he has to put a stop to this. And the story is immediately interrupted because the bar patrons are like, wait, are we still talking about Santa Claus? Like, you know, the big jolly guy. And so they're like, oh, okay, so you're saying he's fat. And he's like, no, he's not fat. He's, you know, he's this ripped superhero dude. So we got our setup. And he's basically fighting a group of, I'd call them like Hydra-esque guys.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, they're called the H Corp, and they're like a evil corporation that are all about like mind control and you know, that very much that sort of vibe.
Yeah. So he's early on setting up that he's going to be interconnecting like the story of Santa with the birth of Jesus story. In that the organization is Herod, which is the king that was like, hey, this Messiah is going to be born. Kill all the male babies that are born between these dates, which is why they had to go hide and stuff.
See, I'm a dirty heathen and I know nothing about the Jesus story, so mm-hmm. I didn't pick that up at all.
Oh, that's fair.
I was like, yeah, H Corp just sounds kind of sinister, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I appreciated the nod to the So yeah, they basically just start telling the story of like Santa is essentially Superman. Like, he was sent from his home planet that was being destroyed to come to Earth and try and stop this evil in its tracks before it could spread further. So that's kind of the difference there, is like there wasn't an immediate, I mean, I guess it depends on which version of Superman you're talking, but the versions where the planet just kind of blows up because of, you know, it's been their own hubris versus when it's Brainiac who's actively like, yeah, I'm going to come find you on Earth and then blow Earth up. It'll be great.
It'll be great. Everyone will love it.
Yeah. And by everyone, he only means him, because Brainiac, what a jerk.
He only thinks about himself.
I know. Selfish. So we get a lot of brooding jokes and him talking about how he's all alone in this battle and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And he's fighting these guys. And we already start getting the interruptions from the people in the bar, like making him explain his creative choices, which I thought was pretty funny, because
it's very funny
when you're trying to explain a story and someone is like constantly like, wait a minute, what about this thing? It's like, could you just let me tell the story?
Just listen to my story. Let me explain my creative vision.
Yeah. So we were told that he's been fighting for 5 years. They have money henchmen. They have like giant mutant freak lab made guys that he has to fight. So basically all the standard comic book baddies are just kind of like,
yeah.
I like how it's just very quickly like, yeah, and then all this stuff that you know from comics exists. Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he stops some street level crime of, you know, just the standard thugs trying to mug somebody. But during that battle is where Santa meets Caribou, and Caribou is a man, half caribou / reindeer. I mean, same difference. He just, I guess, didn't want to keep calling him reindeer. He wanted it to be a little less obvious who the character is supposed to be.
Yeah, it's obviously supposed to be Tony Chopper from One Piece.
That is exactly who it looks like, honestly, is when he's in his 100%. Buff form. And I was here for that. Although he is constantly smoking a cigar in a lot of these early scenes.
I mean, you know, I could see Chopper smoking a cigar.
I was
going to
say, I mean, I'm not as far into One Piece as you are. So maybe later he's like, you know what? I'm an adult now. I can choose this.
It's time for cigarettes.
So we get the introduction where it's the classic crossover thing where the two good guys that are on the same side, they just don't know it yet. They have to fight so you can see them both kind of at their height of how good they are at fighting each other. So they are doing their big battle like, you know, they have to do. And then it is interrupted by a blimp that has machine guns mounted on it that starts shooting at them. And so they have to stop their fight and run away together. And that's when Caribou starts telling us his tragic backstory.
So tragic.
Yep. So what are you thinking so far before we move on?
It's very stupid.
Yeah.
it's got a vibe. It's got a strong vibe. It's got a strong tone. I do appreciate a lot of the like unabashed leaning into the comic book tropes.
Oh yeah.
You know, like I appreciate it quite a lot. I will say I think it really kind of picks up as soon as Caribou shows up and the two of them start kind of bantering back and forth between each other, and there are more kind of people talking to each other, because the internal monologue of the Red Avenger about the brooding and the scum and whatever, it gets old pretty quick.
Yeah.
For me, I have to say. So I am glad that new characters are introduced like right away.
Yeah. I don't think that would have held the attention for an entire book, but I absolutely appreciate not. It was there at the beginning so that we know yes. how brooding he is and that it is not your dad's Santa.
It's not your dad's Santa.
But and then, yeah, Caribou, I think I like as a character more early on, and then I think he just kind of gets annoying as the story goes, but we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, yeah. So we get Caribou's backstory, and it turns out that when Caribou was a person, he was experimented on by H Corp and turned into this Caribou human hybrid, and has vowed to take H Corp down however he can, most likely using his incredible Caribou strength and his giant horns. So they decide to, Caribou and the Red Avenger, they decide to team up and, you know, do the whole buddy cop kind of thing.
So we did learn his name is Rudy, by the way.
Oh, sorry. That's right. My real name is Rudy. Yes.
We don't have to wait too long for them to name drop who he's supposed to be.
Yes. And so, but then very shortly afterwards, Rudy and the Red Avenger are joined by what does her name actually end up being? They're joined by a rather scantily clad woman who wields ice powers, suppose.
She's Frostina. She's supposed to be Frostina, the analog of Frosty the Snowman.
Yes, but she's they cut back to the bar and they have a bunch of conversations about her costume and overall kind of vibe. And the writer is like, no, this is how it has to be. You know, she has to be scantily clad because, you know.
Comics,
yeah.
Yeah, no, he does definitely make fun of that trope a lot. Like, it is
a lot.
It is a constant thing that from this point on, which is what I was saying, like, Caribou gets less cool the longer he's around Frostina because he gets more creepy.
Yeah, like... I find a horny character to be quite funny sometimes, but Caribou becomes less horny and more leering and gross.
Yeah.
As the story goes on, which is unfortunate because he's quite entertaining when he's first introduced, but kind of by the end of the story, I was like, I'm glad that she is constantly like freezing your head to stop you from talking.
Exactly.
So Frostina reveals to them that there are others that are going to be joining their merry kind of band of Avengers, perhaps. Mm. Oh. And so we end up seeing a man and his wife, and he's kind of implied to be some sort of like super genius of some description, and he says that he's invented something new and he's gonna call it a toy.
Dun dun dun. Wait,
dun dun dun.
Does that really warrant a dun dun dun? I'm not sure it does.
I mean, it was a close-up on his face, and
true,
you know, it was a big bubble, so I don't know. But the man does say that they'll need to join up with some other people to kind of make this plan kind of work and make sure that they manage to save the day. And they essentially kind of imply that they're going to dress up in costumes and be superheroes. Like that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and we don't really know their powers yet, but no. They both do have powers that we will find out about as we go on. We just kind of are told about niceness is related to her powers, and being smart seems to be his superpower. So, you know, that's fair, considering there's several Marvel characters whose superpower is basically just that they're very smart, which obviously leads to them, you know, doing things like turning into the Hulk and things like that. You know, Mr. Fantastic wouldn't exist if he wasn't also a crazy genius. So, so I give it a pass.
You give it a pass. But then we cut over to our villains of the story, which are Mr. P, Mr. S, and Mr. G, who are the three kind of ringleaders, I suppose, of the H Corporation, and they want to take out the Red Avenger and now Rudy as well, because they're gonna interrupt their plans and kind of get in the way in general. But then they are visited by the kind of the true mastermind, I suppose, or more of like a alien benefactor, which is what do they call him?
Oh, he has an insanely ridiculous name. Let me find it real fast. The one in charge is a walking, leering, sickly green mass of pure malevolence, a monster with matted fur and cold, leering, unblinking eyes. And he's aggressively pantsless, by the way.
Yes.
I'm trying to find his full name. It is listed somewhere in here. Here we go.
Oh, here we are.
This is the Glizzlaputriputswarinch. So they just call him the Glinch, I believe, the entire time. So the villains are the basically, if we're to break this down, they're the Grinch, but the Glinch. There's a seven-headed rat man that I'm not sure who that's supposed to be.
Okay, I was gonna say, I hope you understood what that one was, because I did not.
Okay. Mr. G is clearly just Hans Gruber from Die Hard. Mr. S is...
Of course he is! Yeah. Oh my god. Gosh. Oh.
Mr. S is what's his name from Christmas Story? Bah Humbug Man.
Scrooge.
Mr. S. And Mr. P, I wasn't sure, because I thought he was supposed to be like Frosty the Snowman, but Frostina is Frosty the Snowman, so I'm not actually sure who he is.
I think Mr. P is Scrooge's assistant.
Okay. I mean, he is in the comic, but is that a character in A Christmas Carol? I'm not super familiar.
No, Bob Cratchit is Scrooge's assistant.
Oh yeah, and he's like the hero, isn't he?
yeah. He's actually like a good person, because he's like, oh my god, can I please have a bonus for Christmas? And Scrooge is like, could you fucking eat my ass?
Mm-hmm.
So no, I have no idea. Unfortunately, him and the seven headed rat were totally lost on me.
Yeah, same. The Hans Gruber one did take me a few pages to be like, why is this guy seem so familiar? And to be fair, I've only seen Die Hard like twice ever. So, and it's been a long time. But isn't it your favorite Christmas movie, Kieran?
It's funny you should mention that. I've never seen it.
I am shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
I know, shocked. So Mr. P, Mr. S, and Mr. G, the Glinch and the rats, they're all basically standing around cackling and being evil. We discover that their ultimate kind of plan is to, kill our heroes, good first step, but also B, use the constant pulse tachyon generator to basically generate a wave of despair across the world and take over the world, which, like, as far as plans go, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
they love to have take over the world plans in brooding comics, so he's right on point with that guy. And then we kind of, once we learn their plan, they go back to the bar in the real world, where everyone's like, wait a minute, the Glinch? Come on now. I mean, the first line is, wait a minute, really? So basically he explains who some of them are, like the bartender's like, what's up with this bison guy? And he's like, he's a caribou. You know, a caribou is another name for a reindeer. His name's Rudy. He's like, ah, come on. But one of the running jokes is like all this really obvious. The really obvious ones are like way over the head of the bar patrons that he's telling the story to. Yeah. So the writer guy just keeps getting more and more frustrated explaining who the characters are. Does he ever get to who the ones that we don't know are? I don't think he does.
I think
he's just supposed to be a snowman. Mr. S, it says. I don't know. It's a little confusing because is there two versions of that character and I'm just missing something?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they do explain the Frostina thing, like, oh, the idea was like she's this like earth spirit who is she is one with. She always has to like make that distinction.
She's always one with the earth spirit, which yeah, like aren't we all?
Yeah, I mean, I am. I don't know about you, but
I am.
Okay, well,
and glad and we if you're listening up. I hope you are too.
Yeah, so there's actually like a diagram where he's explaining like, okay, so she's like this in our book, but then over time it's supposed to be like the story gets confused, so then it's like eventually she was portrayed as a man and then eventually as like a regular guy that has the holiday spirit or whatever and eventually just a snowman, you know. So it kind of shows like, I like that take on the progression of mythology because, you know, stories over time do get turned and they twisted do. And then sometimes you find out, oh, in the original version, you know, Krampus stole children or whatever. Yeah. Like, I think it's a little nod back to that. We get a little more glimpse into the writer and artist in the real world, kind of like every time it goes back we kind of get this sense of like his being so stubborn about like, no, this has to be dark and gritty and it has to like end in a certain way that he wants. And we find out why as the story progresses. But like at this point, you're just like, why is he so like argumentative with his, like, it's supposed to be a collaborative effort they're implying, because often with a lot of teams, it's just like the writer writes it and hands it off. But in my personal experience, I've always worked with artists that wanted to collaborate on story stuff. So like I kind of felt that a little bit, which was kind of nice, you know, like, oh, this is a team that has worked together a long time and they bounce ideas off each other and they're disagreeing on this one point, which is kind of what got them their meeting that they were pitching this comic at cut short, which I don't know why they were pitching a comic on Christmas Eve, but I feel like they should have pitched this in like the summer so that it would be out on time.
nah, it's fine. Don't you just like, you pitch a comic and then like it comes out like a week later? Isn't that how it works?
I assume so. I mean, I've only self-published, so I don't know. I just hit the button and then it's online for people.
You
so.
Don't know what kind of magical machines DC Comics has at their fingertips?
No, I do not. Sorry.
The Comics-O-Matic 5000?
Yeah, exactly. So do you want to take it
from Wonder Woman comic, please?
They just feed a bunch of like old comics into a blender and or a paper shredder and then throw them up into the air. And that's the new comic.
And that's the new comic. Yeah, that is how it works. Uh-huh. And we would know, I think.
I think so, after how long we've been doing this show. All right. So you want to take it from where they go back to the comic book world?
I shall. So Frostina, the Red Avenger, and Rudy all kind of meet up because Frostina has had like a, you know, some kind of vibe about like, this is what we need to do next. And they meet up with the couple that we saw earlier. And the man, his name is now Uber Brain, and her name is Niceness Girl.
But his real name is Joe. Like a certain Savior's dad's name was Joseph.
And you know what her name is, Jonah? You know what her name is?
I don't know.
It's Mary.
Oh, wow. They're really stretching for that one.
Right. But
we kid because we love, though. I mean, you can't just change the names too much or else it'd be like, why is her name Beth? I mean, come on. Mary was right there.
Mary was right there. What's the problem with that? So we find out that His power is essentially being really smart. Her power is like super empathy, I suppose, where she can like change the feelings of other people to be whatever she wants them to be. But it just so happens that she is like super nice and wants to make people really kind and want to give each other hugs and tell each other how much they love each other.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And so they all kind of do the big sort of super team up kind of thing. And then we find out that Mary is pregnant.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. She's pregnant. She's pregnant.
Pregnant?
She's pregnant.
And us finding that out leads to the end of part one.
Which I'd forgotten that part one and part two were actually a thing.
Yeah, me too. But
that's the end of the first act.
I was going to say, so podcast, if the play, that would actually make sense, because he even makes a joke about like, okay, it's a bathroom break time, I got to go, because he's been drinking all those shots at the beginning of the story.
Exactly.
So I was like, hey, you know what? That reminds me, I also need a bathroom break. That happened while I was reading this.
Nice.
So
the podcast is actually going to stop for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. There are snacks available in the foyer. And if you'd like to pick up a program, you still have time.
Yeah. And if you ask real nice after the show, the actors will be signing the programs. So
that's us. We're the actors. Find us after the podcast. So that'll take us into part two. And so we have like a brief moment where we get a little bit more of the relationship between the writer and the artist, because obviously the writer's in the bathroom, and one of the bar patrons is like, oh, I thought that like, you know, he just wrote it and then you put, you know, someone drew the pictures and then you just put the words in and that was kind of it. And, you know, that was really it. And she says like, you know, no, like when we're at our best, we're working together, you know, we're collaborating kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Which that will not come back in the future. It's not foreshadowing at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And so we go back to Mary and Joseph, or sorry, Joe and Mary. Don't want to use his full name because I might give it away. And so she explains that the child that she is pregnant with is the child that's going to save the universe, the Wonder Baby. And she describes it as an angel come to Earth. And Uber Brain says, scientifically, the Wonder Baby will be an evolutionary leap, a super mutation for the better, the culmination of millions of years of mankind's hopes and dreams. The first, but not the last, of what humans will become if allowed. And so the Red Avenger realizes that this is kind of like what the elders of his planet were sensing. This was kind of what he needed to help everyone out with and what he needed to make sure came to pass. And then Frostina, of course, chimes in, says the Earth Spirit, with whom she is one. That is what the Earth Spirit is alluding to as well. So they all need to kind of make sure that the Wonder Baby is born and that our villains don't, you know, fuck it up, basically.
Right. So now we have a very clear, like, here's what the heroes need to do, here's what the villains need to do. Because now that we have the entire super team assembled, they have the, okay, we just need to basically protect her until she can have the baby. So, of course, immediately, like a giant swarm of robots with boxing gloves and some of them have blades on their hands, which I thought was a really funny visual. Like, these giant robots with boxing gloves seems like such a cartoony thing that I actually really like. Really liked those robot designs a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of fighting, of course. And
yeah, it's good fighting.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed 10. It. There's some good gags in there. There's lots of fighting. And then the Glinch shows up with his horrible, horrible smile.
The Glinch.
Yeah. Oh, I think I skipped way too far ahead, actually. So sorry. That was a flashback. Wasn't it? Sorry.
Oh, no, it was. It's sorry. While they're fighting the robots, we get the kind of the backstory out of the Red Avenger, who tells us that the Glinch actually killed his family. So the Red Avenger is like, I don't need kindness. I don't need anyone's pity. I'm out for cold-blooded revenge. You know, very rah. Because this, again, is not your dad, Santa.
No, this is a much, much grumpier, I mean brooding Santa.
It's a grittier Santa.
Yes.
It's going to be rated R, and Santa's going to say fuck.
I don't think he ever does, but he could have.
So they continue to be attacked by more and more and more robots. The Uber brain is trying to like take down the controllers of the robots, and it's distracting them with, you know, visions of snakes and things like that. And then Niceness Girl says, "Taste the wrath of my niceness," and turns the you know, controllers, including Hans Gruber from Die Hard, into very, very nice people, and they decide to direct the robots to hug each other instead of attacking our heroes.
I liked that workaround, because the robots wouldn't be affected by her niceness, but
yes,
Hans Gruber, I mean Mr. G, is like, hey, I'm feeling so good, what if I made these robots just hug instead of trying to kill everyone?
Absolutely. so after the all the robots are, you know, hugging each other and all that sort of stuff, we cut back to the bar where we discover that they've been getting a lot of text messages from the place, or the writer's been getting a lot of text messages from the place where they were pitching, saying, hey, like, you need to come back, and you need to make sure that you hurry back here before the end of the night. But all the bar patrons are basically like, you can't leave. You're like, you haven't finished the story yet. We need to know how it finishes.
Yeah, and they have a bet.
Before you leave.
Like, whoever's version they pick, the other person has to, like, buy a round for everybody or something.
They have to pay for all the drinks, yeah. Yeah. But meanwhile, back at our story, all of the villains are doing that classic villain thing where they're fighting, essentially. They're arguing and being, you know, they're being villains. So the Glinch isn't entirely happy with Mr. G's performance in the previous portion of the story. And so he eats him, which is cool. And then Mr. S basically chases, he gets the seven-headed rat to chase Mr. P out the window. And so he falls out the window to his death, and all of the bar patrons are kind of like, this is getting a little bit much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people dying, a lot of people getting eaten.
Yeah, they're like, and then of course the Glinch saying that the baby must die, and the lady that keeps interrupting in the bar is like, ew, gross, really? What is like, this story is not what I thought. Yeah, basically, like, they're getting upset at the writer of the story because they're like, this is not very Christmassy, you know, like, everyone's getting killed all of a sudden. And then there's a whole joke about this guy who has been very grumbly in the bar and is basically like, I don't like unfriendly stuff. You better be telling a friendly story. And then you find out he's like this academic like person who just happens to hang out in this dive bar. he has like a whole thing about like how you have to honor the fundamental narrative, like, and all this stuff about like how literature is supposed to be, you know, like how stories should unfold and things. I thought that was a good gag. Like,
I was funny. Yeah.
Just cause like, you know, they could have easily made his running joke be him still saying the friendly, unfriendly thing. And then that just kind of comes out of nowhere, which I thought was pretty good. And so basically the heroes have teamed up now and are using the Red Avenger's sleigh, which I'm assuming rocket powered, because it's always rocket powered when it isn't reindeer powered.
Always.
He's with Rudy, and they are delivering toys, which are the invention that Joe was coming up with, which is basically like a thing to counteract the despair waves. So it'll make people, it's supposed to be like a nanobot technology thing. So like people being around them and playing with them will help immunize them from the despair is the idea. And we get his backstory of where he's like, okay, I know what they're trying to do because I applied to work there as like a way to just kind of meet them and see what they were doing. So he used his, you know, high intelligence to trick them into bringing him into the company so he could kind of scope them out. So he's been doing his own spy work. So he's basically the real hero of the story, him and Mary. I mean,
like, I would say so.
And everyone else is just kind of there to, like, you know, be silly and
support their efforts.
Right. And it's fine. Like that's how it works out in some of these. There's also a Riff Tracks Easter egg where the hotel they go stay at has a Welcome Riffers, which is, you know, like for one of their live shows, I would assume. You got to get those in there. So basically we're leading up to Santa and Rudolph having to figure out how to like navigate, because of course they get attacked, the sled engines blow up, and they pull a part of the engine out, and essentially Rudy uses it as a jetpack and starts flying the sleigh. And they are trying to find a place to have the baby because they're like, Mary is like, hey, I'm about to have this baby like right now, we need to get me anywhere that's off the street.
She got really pregnant really quickly.
Yes. And I loved her line about the living hope of the known universe is about to be born, you stupid. And then it's like bleeped out. It's like she's just like had enough of them arguing constantly, all of the Christmassy based characters. And since they can't figure out whether or not the hotel has vacancy, they're arguing over whether or not the no on the no vacancy is illuminated. Then they're like, what about this crappy barn across the street? And they're like, yeah, let's go there. so they can replicate the manger scene, you know. But in the meanwhile, the villains have gotten their despair machine and they've gotten it up and running. So there's a thick fog of despair rolling in. So Santa and Rudy start, I mean, excuse me, the Red Avenger. What am I thinking? There's no one named Santa in this book. Come on.
What?
And so basically they start falling out of the sky because they hit this despair wall. But the day is saved because of the bag of toys. And the Red Avenger throws a toy to Rudy, who then is like super happy and saying how he's a super wonderful, attractive man beast for the ages and is beloved and desired by all. So a huge ego boost from holding a toy, apparently. And meanwhile, the Mary and Joe with Frostina are in the crappy barn and Mary's about to have the baby when who should appear but Mr. P, who survived his fall after all. And now he is a weird Professor X for some reason.
Like, yeah, looks very Professor X.
Yeah, he's in a wheelchair. He's got the bald head and he's like, he even talks about how one day I was hoping to start a school where I helped other people with powers.
With mutant abilities. Yeah,
which I appreciated that one. Basically just like, hey, all of these guys are mutants. That's why they're weird and have powers and stuff. And it turned out that the despair is actually just amplifying the powers of the villain characters in the first place. Mm-hmm. But he's like, hey, don't kill me because I want to help you guys. And of course, they're like, I guess we have to trust him now because we're the heroes. And that's always how it goes.
That's what we do.
That's what we do.
And they're like, it always works out for us.
Uh-huh. So more battles happening while Red Avenger and Rudy are trying to break in to stop the despair machine. And they have to face off against Rat Kong, which is the giant seven-headed rat guy that we weren't quite sure who he represents.
Just rats, I guess. You know, that
New York
that classic Christmas character.
And of course, Rudy uses his hoof power, which is his classic move, to try and fight them.
So the Red Avenger and Rudy start fighting Rat Kong. But meanwhile, back at the barn, Uber Brain is, he's reading Mr. P's mind and he's like, yeah, no, this is all like this is legit as hell. He can help us out. But it turns out Mr. P is betraying them and has in fact led the Glinch and Mr. S and all of these robots to their exact location because Mr. P just wants to be loved by Mr. S.
Yes. the reasoning behind that was pretty funny, I thought. like, betraying him for power? No. He's like, I helped you. Please love me now.
Yep. So Frostina freezes him and shatters him into 1,000 pieces. And then Frostina decides on her catchphrase for when she's about to use her powers, which is white power.
And is immediately told, that's a terrible catchphrase, by the way.
We then cut back to the Red Avenger and Rudy fighting Rat Kong. And they're really having a tough go of it. But the Red Avenger then gets a mind message from Uber Brain, who says there's a lot of trouble and they need help. So the Red Avenger leaves and Rudy is left by himself to fight Rat Kong. But just before the Red Avenger leaves, he says, good luck, my friend. It's a strong moment. And so the Red Avenger departs to help in the fight while Rudy is fighting with Rat Kong and Frostina is fighting against all the robots. And in the end, the baby and Joseph and Mary are destroyed by the robots and Santa is left holding the ashes. And that's the end of the story.
Yep. Or at least.
Just kidding. They cut back to the bar and the writer's like, yeah, that's the end of the story. And the bar patrons are all say, get fucked.
Yeah. Yep. He's like, that's terrible. And also one of the patrons is very mad that he killed the Lord. He's like, no, it was the Wonder Baby.
The Wonder Baby.
And there's also a discussion in here that was not, I mean, it's a little more deep than I was expecting. And that was about like, the writer's obligation to what happens in the story, as far as like, well, you decided to make this happen. So even though the bad guys are technically the ones who killed all our heroes, it's like you consciously made that decision. So you have to claim some ownership over the story you wrote, which I thought was actually a little more deep than I was expecting from a comedy book about Christmas. but I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I did appreciate it that, yeah, because he's trying to like deny any of this and say like, no, this is the way the story was going to go. And this is how the characters would have to be. And she said, no, but it's still your story.
Yeah.
You still wrote this. Like you still have to actually take some responsibility for what actually happens in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely a thing that is always an interesting discussion because take a writer who had some mega success like George R. R. Martin. And it's like, look at all the horrible, horrible things characters in his books do. So what does that say about him? I don't know. Like, that's an interesting question to pose, because as far as I know, he's a very reasonable and chill dude in real life.
And pleasant person. Yeah.
Yeah. But then it all kind of comes full circle because we get the backstory of this writer character who, it turns out, basically became a huge successful comic writer because he was writing, you know, the 90s era of dark, cynical comic books. And that's where he got famous. And now that his star is starting to wane a bit, he's kind of desperately looking to get some of that back because he's like, yeah, what happened was I was happy because him and the writer became close and eventually started dating and got married. And then he was happy and that ruined his ability to be dark and brooding 24/7. So he's basically like trying to recapture that. But in the process is like it's kind of sabotaging his own storytelling because it like even the writers and even these bar patrons are like that feels very shoehorned in at the end to make it suddenly take that turn. So, I completely agree with that it's okay to. If you're writing dark stuff, it's okay to also write stuff that isn't super dark all the time.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it was, I did appreciate it that she basically just like came for him and was like, well, you were trying to show everyone that you still had the magic, so you went straight for the heart of the Christmas beast to annihilate it and prove you're still a comics writing badass. Which, like, I feel like a lot of people these days who are writing comics or writing like things in that kind of sphere are like, they're trying to prove that they're like the biggest badass out there. And I just don't think you need to.
No, I think we've grown past that in comics. Like,
I fucking hope so.
Like, there's a place for dark stuff, but the cynicism really needs to just go. It's done. It's,
oh, absolutely.
We had two decades of it. We're good. The 80s and 90s were so cynical. It's like, let's just move on. It's been, 30 to 40 years, depending on which of those you're looking at.
Oh my god, yes. Yeah.
So the fact that Watchmen came out does not mean that you still have to write comics in that style.
Yeah. It's like, but what if they were superheroes,
mm-hmm.
but they were mean
oh.
and did bad things as well?
Yeah.
What if heroes don't exist and no one is good?
Huh? Oh, you got me.
What if everyone is a villain?
Fun.
Hey,
that sounds yeah. great.
Conflict all the time.
Mm-hmm. What if with great power comes no responsibility?
Waka waka waka. Yeah. Also, speaking of George R. R. Martin, I blame George R. R. Martin for basically every piece of fantasy in the last like 15 years being like very dark and very gritty and really leaning into that, like, yeah, but it's realistic, so that means that everyone's an unrepentant dickhole.
Yeah. It doesn't track for me and my personal experience with dealing with humans.
Right?
Also, right? I read an interview about a guy who actually lived in the area where, like, you know that game This War of Mine? And it's very, like, depressing and like bleak. Well, this person's like, yeah, I was a kid when my country was basically going through this. And the one thing that he learned was that the opposite of what TV and movies and games and comics always show us happens, where the regular people didn't form these weird hierarchies of like, no, I'm the top dog now. It was like, no, everyone actually came together and helped each other survive in those situations. Which makes me very happy to hear, considering the writers who are obsessed with that, like, worst in humanity narrative. You're really only looking at people who are already in power who don't want to give up that power are really the only people who tend towards that. Regular everyday people go the opposite direction to, like, the extreme when there's really bad stuff happening. Which, you know, restored a little faith in humanity for me.
Yeah, yeah. And just the one last thing that I want to say about this whole, like, you know, thing is, even if it was true that like everything in the real world is gritty and hard and has, you know, lots of edges to it and people are all bastards, that doesn't mean I have to read about it all the time.
Yeah.
It's fine for stories to be not like the real world. Like,
escapism is a thing for a reason.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we get to...
Anyway.
We can talk more about this during the wrap-up. So let's wrap up the comic yes. and talk about the real ending of the book, which I am kind of a fan of when books will tell a fake ending and then be like, but here's what really happened. Because,
yeah.
I mean, there's a reason I love the movie Clue with its three different endings. So the artist's version of the story, instead, Frostina is able to defeat all the robots, and Joe is able to use his crazy mind powers to frustrate the Glinch. And my favorite part... And because this is a joke I actually make a lot, where the Glinch's heart grows three sizes and says, what happened then? Well, here's what I say. The Glinch's heart grew three sizes that day and exploded, killing him on the spot. So I'm going to say that me thinking that joke over all these years, having not read this comic, is just Bill Corbett's influence of his style of humor of that I've been consuming all these years.
Yeah.
So she did even get to work in like kind of a dark, gritty thing in the happy ending. So, you know, you got to appreciate that. So, of course, Wonder Baby's born. And Red Avenger's like, careful, Wonder Baby, there's lots of them and they're about to charge. And Wonder Baby in like a weird glowy talk bubble is like, not on my watch, and just starts flying around destroying all the robots and reversing all the evil. And Rat Kong gets kicked in the nuts by Rudolph, and
he calls it the Nutcracker.
And then the scales are lifted from the eyes of what's his name? Christmas Carol guy. Why can I not think of Bah Humbug?
Scrooge.
Scrooge. See, because when I think Scrooge, I just think Scrooge McDuck. So, we basically get the super happy ending where Santa decides to stick around and keep an eye on things, and he grows fat and happy, and Miracle Baby saves the day by being born. And of course, everyone in the bar likes that version better. So,
also, Frostina picks up a top hat for some reason.
Basically just connecting her to Frosty the Snowman even more, because she's like, if you ever need my powers, just build a snowman and put this top hat on it. Yeah. And then we finally get there was a running joke throughout about Charlie Brown not being in it. And even the writer's like, oh, that's who I forgot to put in. And so at the end, we get Captain Amiable, who is just Charlie Brown, or he's just a hobo that is pretending to be a superhero. We don't know. That's where it leaves us. So yeah, that it's an interesting book. Like, what did you think overall, Kieran?
It's interesting. It is interesting. It's not what I expected. I don't know what I did expect, but I think a surprisingly well thought out kind of thought piece on, like, you know, gritty stories and the responsibility of the writer, and also a over the top very very comic booky retelling of every Christmas story all at once, mm-hmm. wasn't what I expected.
No, not me either.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I will say it was fun to read. Mm-hmm. The art is pretty good. There are some bits that I was like, on. Rudy definitely kind of like grates a bit, yeah, as the story.
He sours as soon as Frostina shows up because he's just too pervy.
It's just too pervy. Yeah. Yeah. Like there's a line, you know. Yeah. There's a line that you can kind of draw with that sort of thing. And some of the jokes didn't like land amazingly well for me, but a lot of them did. Mm-hmm. And it was quite funny. And again, I thought the kind of the bits in between with the bar were surprisingly very intelligent and very well thought out. And so, you know what? I'm going to say I would recommend this. I would, however, say that it's Christmas, period, holiday times. If you were looking for a Christmas book, you know, something that celebrates goodwill on earth to all men and whatever, no, I wouldn't. It's definitely not about that. It's not. I would not say this is a Christmas book.
Would you say Die Hard is a Christmas movie? Oh wait, you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, so
it's an action movie that takes place at Christmas.
I'm legally obligated to not comment on whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I can't say either way.
Okay. What about Gremlins?
I've never seen Gremlins either.
Okay.
I've never seen a movie. I'm sorry. Yeah, like if you're looking for a Christmas book, no. But if you're into like the really like kind of cheesy, over the top, like comic booky in the most aggressive sort of way kind of story, then yeah, absolutely. I would recommend it. What did you think, Joe?
I liked it. I am a little biased because, like I said, I'm a huge MST and Riff Trax fan, and there were lines that I could hear in Bill Corbett's voice when I was reading them in the comic, because like the just his delivery on those shows fit some of the lines in this perfectly. So I kind of did appreciate that aspect where I'm like, okay, knowing his stuff over all these years is actually, I think, enhancing it for me personally, because I kind of know his voice a bit from just, you know, hearing him make fun of movies all these years. So a lot of the one-liners actually kind of worked for me maybe better than they would if someone that was less familiar with that. I thought the story was pretty fun. I think it gets a lot better in part two. Part one, I was still not quite sure what the point of it all was, if I'm being honest. And then but in hindsight, once you get it's, and it's real near the end, and it has to be story wise for it to really work. But when we get the backstory of the writer and the artist team, and how he had been this famous writer for, you know, the dark brooding era of comics, that it kind of makes everything else that came before it make more sense. So I definitely feel like it's one of those books that I like more after having finished it than I did while I was reading it. Like, I think if I reread this, I'm going to like it better than I did on my first read. I would have done a reread, but I really didn't have time because, you know, we've been sick and stuff. And that was a whole thing. But I'm not going to get into that now. But like you said, it's not particularly like a Christmas thing in like, oh man, I want a Christmassy book. But it's like, if you want a book that plays with the tropes of that, that's, and mixing that with the tropes of comics, I think that actually was a very successful like pairing of the two. And I like the initially like, oh, we're being kind of cagey about who these characters are, and then immediately getting rid of that, like as the joke where we're just like, yeah, this guy's just the Grinch now. Like, we're not even going to try and hide this. And he, because he like only speaks in rhyme, and he's just a big furry. I mean, he just looks like the Grinch completely. He's just in the that artist style, in Len Peralta style. And I actually really like his style of art. It actually reminds me a lot of my brother Jeremy that I used to do comics with. It's actually a very similar, like, just his line work and stuff reminds me of that. So there's a certain part of my brain that just, I don't know, that style really, it really clicks for me. so yeah, I did enjoy it quite a bit. Now, if I were recommending it to someone, I would probably give them a few caveats, like, so they knew a little bit more of what they're getting into than we did, just because I think that would kind of enhance their like enjoyment, because they're like, I went in expecting it to be like, what if Santa were Batman? That is what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think that was what I was expecting to.
And I think that's kind of what you're supposed to think going into it, because of the first few pages are just that. When he's talking about the Santa stuff. And then once Rudolph shows up and stuff, though, it kind of goes in its own direction. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I would recommend it. So I think that's going to be it, though. So, where can people find you online, Kieran?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at @MrK_Bennett. You can check out my D&D podcast. That's @ForCrits and Giggles. At For CNG Podcast. Sorry. It's called For Crits and Giggles. It's at For CNG Podcast. Jesus Christ. And Jenna, where can people find you online?
Oh man, all over. You can find me on Twitter @ARealJonah. And you can find me occasionally streaming on Twitch at our Inks and Issues channel. But yeah, that's pretty much it for us. Oh, hey, you know, actually, I did actually start a Gumroad, which is a place where you can sell your writing. So if people want to check that out, let me look up what my URL is. Oh, it's real easy. It's gumroad.com/JonahGregory. I think people will figure that out. And I have a short story up there people can buy. It's an older one, and I'm working on some new stuff, so keep an eye on that. I think you can even follow me on there, and that way, when I do post new things, you can get them. In fact, I think if I can find the PDFs, I will be able to put my old comics up there, speaking of those. So everything that I put on there is pay what you want. You can pay zero, totally fine. Just like, you know, check it out and hopefully enjoy. And with that, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye. I love you.
Need more mutants, metahumans, or monsters in your life? Then check out these other Geekly Inc. shows, including Cthulhu and Friends, Dear Internet, Greetings Adventures, Transformation Sequence, and many more fantastic podcasts. You can help us make the show the best it can be by supporting us over at patreon.com/inksandissues, where you can get bonus content, early access to episodes, and can even vote on comics for us to review. Don't forget to also leave us a 5-star rating and review to help us spread the word. Want to interact with us on Twitter? You can find us at Inks and Issues or on Twitch at twitch.tv/inksandissues. Now do yourself a favor and go read some gosh darn comics!